your background as a prosecutor makes you pretty unique in Springfield. What do you think that brings to the table?
Well, one of the things that I talked about and how it shapes my priorities is that you see, and I think the kind of stereotype of a prosecutor is someone who puts someone in prison for a long period of time, and that is certainly true in more extreme cases. But there's so many more that we see, and we see more, it seems like, every year, who commit nonviolent offenses, often that have underlying causes for that behavior. You know, if it's theft or if it's drug use, so many times it's because there's a substance abuse issue or mental health issue that's not being addressed because there's no funding for it. So now the criminal justice system has to deal with it in the jails when we really should just be addressing the causes of that behavior to begin with. So that's going to be one of the priorities for me, is seeing if we can actually make a commitment again to mental health treatment and to substance abuse treatment, because I think we're going to see a huge saving. First of all, it's the humane thing. You're actually treating the behavior which is causing that criminal behavior, but it's going to actually bring a lot of savings to the criminal justice system, because the most expensive way to address it is through jail. And that's not why people go into law enforcement, and that's not why we have these jails. And unfortunately, that's the only option they have right now. So one of the things that I will hopefully do with my experience is try to convince people where the priority should be with that funding.
And in Springfield, though, we've had a situation for the past decade or so where we've had prisons overloaded and state funding decreased, but then at the same time, not very much investment in schools and other preventative measures, as you say, you know, because people are unwilling to pay the capital cost up front. What do you think you could do in Springfield to be an advocate for that?
Well, I think, you know, you're exactly correct. If along with those other issues with substance abuse and mental health treatment, education and employment have a direct correlation with criminal justice issues. When people do turn to crime because they can't support their family in another way, when they drop out of school too early because they don't think there's jobs out there or college is affordable for them, or they aren't being reached because we're not doing vocational training in school and they don't want to go to a four-year school. These are all issues which are giving, we're not giving the guidance and the optimism for the future to our youth, which then ultimately and too often that kind of lack of hope that they have turns into criminal behavior. And so I think they all are, it is all interrelated. And I think that's one of the things is perhaps as a prosecutor, my experience there when I'm, you know, there's a lot of lobbying among legislators. And that's one of the things that I hope to talk to and say, well, I hope I have some credibility with these issues because of my experience as a prosecutor. But in fact, these are the things we should make priorities in Springfield.
And the other night, I was listening back to what you had said on Wednesday, and you used the word equitable to describe school funding. Do you support SB 16?
I'd like to see its current shape when it comes out. I know Senator Menar and others were working toward it, and I know there was quite a bit of retooling that they were going to be doing to it in the hopes of the new session. So I'd like to see the actual framework of it. But I support the principles behind it, which is it shouldn't matter where you're from, what zip code you're born into. We should all have the same access to technology and the same value and the same amount of education funding that's going to these schools. And it shouldn't really just be based on how wealthy your town is.
And right now, SB 1 is caught up in the court system. We won't know about the constitutionality of the pension overhaul. But if it is struck down by the Supreme Court, what is your prescription for going forward? Would you like to go back to SB 2404 with negotiating with unions?
Well, I think certainly everybody's got to be at the table. That's the number one thing. These people are their public teachers and public employees that have devoted a portion of their paycheck. Every week they've showed up to work, part of their money has gone to a pension, and because the legislators haven't funded it to the same level, now that's in danger. What I think is bothersome or really troubling to me is that you're seeing now legislators seem to be willing to devote money toward fighting a court fight, which should be going toward funding the pension crisis and the shortfall that we have there. So I don't know what apparently it's short, it's fast-tracked. We should actually have arguments on it in March, but I'm like everyone else in saying, let's see what parameters the Supreme Court gives us in saying what's legal and what's not, and use that as a framework to go forward. But you've got to have everybody at the table, particularly when you're talking about affecting something you've guaranteed to employees in the past.
Would you be at all open to retooling the pension ramp, which has last year, 2013, was the height of the pension ramp where we had to pay the most in, and that's where we get a quarter of every dollar going to pensions. Would you be at all open to retooling that ramp?
You know, as for specific legislation, I mean, I've been sworn in now about 15 minutes, so I'm going to have to look at it as it comes to say, you know, your position on wide issues without seeing the actual legislation. So often the devil's in the details, and I'd have to just kind of see how it's presented and talk to the people who'd be affected by that, particularly here in the district.
And something that's been stalled in Springfield for several years now is gambling expansion, but Danville was, you know, on a short list to get a online casino. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Like Senator Frericks and I believe also Representative Chad Hayes, I would support a casino in Danville. I was sad that it didn't get, that Governor Quinn didn't pass it when it was run on his desk last session. But when you're talking about an industry that has a huge tax rate, much higher than any other corporation, you're bringing money in from largely out of state, particularly over its location on the state line. You're talking about construction dollars and later well-paying jobs to maintain the casino. I think it's win-win, and particularly the way that Danville was handled. I was so impressed with the way Vermilion County, Danville, and the county seemed to really be unselfish in their talk about revenue sharing, and that's what we need to look at. We're all in this together, and the casino is one of those possible solutions. It's not the only solution, but it's one of the possible solutions we can do to help the job outlook right now in Vermilion County.
And the budget fight has been pretty bitter for the past couple of years. This past year because of the election, but this coming year because the governor is now a Republican. Bruce Rauner has been very vehement in his non-support of extending the 2011 income tax hike. Now that's sunset. What do you think that fight might look like with the governor?
Well, you're exactly right. I was listening to the campaign like everyone else, and I didn't agree with much of the rhetoric that was coming out of then-candidate Rauner. Now he's the governor. He has said during the campaign he doesn't need to raise taxes but can actually increase funding for public education and public works. I'm very curious to see how that's done. And now that the reality of governing is setting in and he's looking at the projections and looking at the numbers, I'll be interested to see, you know, how that campaign rhetoric actually becomes legislation that can pass. But the exciting thing about it, I suppose, is for the last, 8 years or more, you've been able to just do it with one party. So one party's been able to sit on the sidelines and just play the naysayer and not actually roll up their sleeves and get involved in it. Any now reform is going to have to come with bipartisan support. And so I think you're going to have to see a little more give and take, which is ultimately what legislators are supposed to do. I'm very excited to see what we can do if we work together and actually go and achieve the mission that we're sent to Springfield to do.
And finally, as we all know, the speaker kind of rules the roost in Springfield. Have you ever met him?
No, never met him. And my understanding is that by being in the Senate, I won't meet him very often. So that's imagine that will be an introduction that I'll have anytime soon. But I hear that his reputation is, like everyone, I know that his reputation looms large in Springfield.
And the Senate is a more progressive caucus than the House. The House has several Democrats who side with Republicans on budget issues. The Democrats in the Senate are more progressive. Where do you fit into that continuum, would you say?
Well, I would certainly say that I'm progressive in my views, but it really just depends on the issue. I mean, there are so many large budget issues, which shouldn't be divided by bipartisan, divided on partisan lines. When you're talking about education, we all have an interest in that. When you're talking about ways to improve the community with economic development, there shouldn't really be a partisan way to do that. So for the most part, I would consider myself to be progressive, but many of these things, if we're going to reach a solution, I think are going to, especially in this coming up session, are going to require a bipartisan approach.